You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
I love both of your hairs.
I got it cut in color.
Welcome to Psyched by
Angie. I know.
This is Mary Grace Randazzo-Ratliff, or MG for short. I've been a psychotherapist in private practice for 32 years now. Guess what, everyone? We all have issues. So it's time to lighten up and move forward. Let's stop letting our crap control us and take control of our crap.
Hey, we're all together again.
What is up, people?
Hello.
Hello.
We got a full house.
We do. Yes. We do. And I'm so glad. And I want to thank our listeners so much. I was just, quoting some numbers on Facebook. We had close to 8,000 views in the last show, which was wonderful. So thank you to everyone. And I want to just ask everyone that's listening to please, we are on Apple Podcast and Google Podcast and the Detroit Podcast Network, Facebook, YouTube. To please come in and like our pages and subscribe. We need your support, and we definitely need your input. We did get a show request, people.
Oh, good.
From Bernadette. I'm sorry. And she wants us to do a show, and this is such a hot topic, everybody. She wants us to do a show about parents in the conflict with sending your kids back to school this fall.
I was just talking about this last night to my wife. I'm like,
I just had a conversation on podcast about this yesterday.
Because even if they're open, there's so many parents who are not going to send their kids back yet.
Yeah, I might be one of those.
Mm-hmm.
I might be one too. They don't know it yet.
Yeah.
It's pretty scary. And just to go there for a second, I just got off the phone with my brother in Ohio, and he was telling me, because our father was got the possibility of having a surgery, and he can't show up because one of his coworkers showed up to work today and said, hey, my mom's been diagnosed with COVID.
Oh, boy.
And the guy said, well, let me see if you have a fever, and checked his temperature, said, I think you're okay. Come to work. Came into the building, worked for 4 hours. And I said, what an idiot. The rules are, if you've been exposed, you can't go in. Not only that you have a fever, you may not have a fever, but you may be asymptomatic.
Well, because it's still in the incubation period.
I know.
You might not have anything yet.
I know. Exactly. So that was pretty freaking irritating.
You know what? I think that it's a worthwhile discussion to have. I can wear my public health hat and bring in some numbers and statistics, because that's what my friend and I did on her podcast, because she's a physician. And so we did it in a manner where I, as a parent of teenagers, one in college, three in high school, what would that look like? It's well worth having. We had about 700 people watching at one time. Because parents are concerned.
Yep.
And the nice thing is we can get rid of the fear mongering, because ultimately it's going to come down to the parents' choice.
Yeah.
But I think it's good to be able to make an informed decision
rather
than and a decision informed by, I don't know, the crazies, what I mean?
Yes.
And also we don't want people, buying into the whole, oh, it's all a myth, it's all a hoax.
So we need
to make sure that people just get accurate scientific information, pros and cons, and then you make a decision that is based on information.
Yes. Yeah. I just pulled up an article from the LA Times talking about it. And, there's a research study that came out yesterday about, the seriousness of COVID and what their findings are now physically, that it affects the capillaries in the body and it shoots out small clots.
Yeah, I actually did a whole, because what it's causing is an autoimmune disease. Mm-hmm. So we'll do this when we do the podcast, because put together all the different issues that people are now showing up in hospitals with and at doctors' offices with. From ventricular disease to COVID toe, as they're calling it, because of this coagulation issue. So
Yeah. So Benny, thank you so much. Benedette from New York State. Thank you. I know her. I appreciate her messaging me, and we will definitely do this show. And we should do this show. You know, we might do it next week. But what we will do is we'll put a blast out on our Facebook page saying that we're doing this show, and so that she knows in advance and can watch us or catch us on, you know, any of the podcast places that we're on, Google, Apple, Detroit Podcast Network. So I thought that was wonderful.
Yeah, great.
You know, again, users, we really, really are listening and appreciating the feedback. Today, we were going to have the listeners get to know us all better. So I'm hoping that everyone kind of thought, you know, of some stories about themselves that can introduce people into who you are.
Why, are we sure we want to do that?
Let's get messy.
It could get really messy.
Let's have them really get to know who they're listening to. So I had such a huge meeting today. I was so tired, and I turned to my daughter and I'm like, now what story am I supposed to tell? And she like screamed at me, my gosh, mom, I told you this four times. She said, talk about, you know, the way you were brought up and how you got to the University of Michigan. And
yeah, know, I like that story. I love that story.
Dude, it's absolutely, no one would believe it. No one would believe how I got
to. No, an African would believe it.
Yes. All of my African American listeners, those people that believe in, you know, there is no coincidences, that there's a divine upstairs and they do direct things. I'll give you this story where I came from. I always talk about it. I'm an Italian 100%, and I came from Western New York, the great belt of Western New York. And so when you're coming in, you know, from Ohio and into Erie, Pennsylvania, you begin, when you enter my area where I was raised, there's just grapes everywhere. There's wineries everywhere. And that's where I was raised. And about 10 minutes from my little town called Fredonia, there is a place called Lilydale, Matthew. The story, everybody wants to go. But Lilydale has been on HBO. You could Google search it. It's one of the world's largest spiritualism centers. And I grew up in Hard Knocks. Like, I definitely, there was no silver spoons, basically plastic spoons for me. And so I grew up, you know, struggling, poverty. You know, it was the 70s, parents divorced. And I was the kid that probably shouldn't have made it and been successful. So when I went to school, I went to community college first and then transferred to a great school called Rochester Institute of Technology. But in my first year of community college, I struggled. I liked going to the parties. I liked all the social activities, and I struggled, but I had a good friend of mine sit my ass down and say, you know, look, you don't make it at community college. You're going to trade school. You got to show up. And he was really cute. And I thought, oh. And he said, look, I'll study with you. And I thought, oh, I'm so studying with you. And I went on to the dean's list the very next term, and I stayed on there, and I ended up transferring to Rochester Institute of Tech. And there, the dean of the college was my advisor, and he said, you know, I want you at grad school, and I want you to go to the University of Michigan. That's my alma mater. And, you know, I came, you know, without really educated parents, and, you know, if some professor said I should go here, that's where you go. So, but the problem was, and I'm going to get to Lilydale, the problem was that I found all the money. I got all the grants. I got the scholarships. It was out of state tuition, but I was about $2,000 short. And I didn't know what to do. I applied to Syracuse University in-state, which I didn't need the money. And then there's Michigan. And Michigan was top three at the time. It's now number one. But I lived with my grandfather during, you know, these college times. And my grandmother was this short Italian woman who wanted me so educated. And she only had an eighth grade education and wanted me to move on. Like, she just intuitively knew I had something as far as helping people, healing people. She knew that I just naturally was able to do it. And she said, I want you out of this small town. I want you to go off and get as educated as you possibly can. And unfortunately, after I graduated from RIT, this grandmother, who was like a mother to me and my, you know, guardian, she passed away. And so now I'm just with my grandfather. And my grandfather was an old fashioned Sicilian dude who did not give money freely. So I said to him, Grandpa, I could go to the University of Michigan, but I'm short $2,000. You could give me a loan, or I can go to Syracuse University. And he goes, I don't know. Well, he didn't know for months and months and months. And it got to be about May of the summer before I'm supposed to go. And I had not answered Michigan, and he would not answer me. And so what happened was, my grandfather, who was in the restaurant business, got a call, because he set up, you know, he sold pizza ovens and everything that restaurants needed. And my grandfather got a call from Lilydale. Now, my grandmother's been gone now 10, 11 months. And the guy says, you know, Mr. Vallone, could you come and fix our pizza oven? And my grandfather goes out there. I kid you not, I can't make this shit up. Grandfather goes out there, and the guy says, Mr. Vallone, we don't know each other, but you do know where you are. This is Lilydale, and we're all mediums that live here. You can't live in Lilydale unless you're a medium or gifted in that way. And you have to be tested. And it's a community that has been around since the early 1800s, at least. And he said, John, he said, did you lose your wife? And my grandfather just kind of looked at him and he said, yes, I did. And he said, was your wife's name Phyllis? And he said, yes. She was. And he said, do you have a granddaughter living with you? And my grandfather said, yes, I do. I kid you not. I swear to God, I'm not making this up. And he said, your wife is so strong, and she is here, and she's so upset with you, and she's shaking her finger at you. Now, in Italian culture, if your grandmother ever shakes her finger at you, she's saying shame on top of you, and she is pissed. And you are in deep crap. If that finger comes out, you know you're in deep crap, and you better shut up and listen. So he said, she's shaking her finger at you because this young girl, she needs your help, and you are not helping her. And time is running out on whatever it is she's asking for. She's asking for financial help, and she's trying to advance herself. And your wife is saying she needs to be in Michigan. She needs to be in Michigan. Does that make sense to you, John? Well, my grandfather got so spooked that he said, well, yeah, it does. Now, Lilydale is surrounded by Catholics, and they don't tell each other that they all dip into Lilydale every once in a while to find out. Like, you can go to a family reunion and somebody will whisper, I went to the Dale. And all the women go, what they say. But the men don't get involved in the Dale. And so for my grandfather, it was quite shocking. And so my grandfather comes home, and I'm again, you know, pouring over my applications, and I'm thinking, well, Michigan, it's probably not going to take me now. I haven't answered. Now it's June, probably. And he looks at me, he walks in the house, and he says, Mary Grace, you're going to Michigan. And I said, what made you decide that? And he said, first, he goes, just a minute, I have to get my angina medicine. I'm very upset. And he says to me, you're not going to believe what I tell you. You're just not going to believe it. And I'm like, what? And he said, I got called to the Dale, because we call it the Dale. I said, you did? I said, for what? And he told me pizza oven. And he goes, but you're not going to believe it. Your grandmother is very, very angry at me. And she said, you have to be at Michigan and I'm going to give you the money. It's going to be a loan, but you have to go to Michigan. I said, well, Grandpa, at this point, I don't even think they're going to accept me. Like, I never answered them. I've missed, oh, it was probably the end of June or July even, because I had missed the orientations. And so I call Michigan and I said, hi, this is Mary Grace Randazzo. I've been accepted to the University of Michigan, but I haven't answered yet. And I wanted to tell you, I would like to come. And the woman says, kid you not, what are you talking about? You accepted months ago.
Oh, wow.
I said, what? And she goes, Mary Grace, you called me months ago. She goes, you're all set. We're just wondering when you're going to pick your classes. I about died. I about died. And so this is how I just kid you not. This is how I got to Michigan. It was a divine intervention from Lilydale. You know,
it was grandma.
My grandmother haunted him from the grave, because her whole thing with me was my education. She wanted me educated. She was trapped herself with only an eighth grade education. She didn't know how to drive. She only wore dresses. I mean, she's a very, you know, Italians are were listening or nodding their heads. She's so, so traditional Italian. And, but she was so brilliant. This is a woman whose insights and common sense, like she was intuitive. She was instinctual. She could read people well. She knew what she was talking about. And, but she was not boastful or somebody who, you know, even talked much in the conversations. But her and I and my aunts, we were all very close and we would talk, and the aunts decided, you know, she must be educated. Don't let her get married, because that was common, and get her educated. And so I went to Lilydale. And of course, whenever I tell the Lilydale story, how many people want to go to Lilydale? I mean,
thing. Wow.
So we will get a bus together.
Yep, let's do it.
Go to Lilydale. I kid you not, that's how I got to Michigan.
What a beautiful story. I you know, I can never get enough of this story. And every time you tell it, I just get chills.
It was truly, I just was shocked. Absolutely shocked. And when I grew up, I mean, we used to say that's where the spooks are. The ghosts.
The spooks.
The ghosts are in the Lilydale, and you don't go to the Dale. But it ended up helping me to get to Michigan. I mean, it really was extraordinary. I have so many Lilydale now stories after that, because I then went myself and shocked. And we were, I'll tell you this quick part. We were so scared about going into, again, for kids near the Dale, you're scared to death of the Dale. And so my friend Nella, we were waitressing and we decided to go get a reading on a whim. And we walked in and we were knocking on the door, and the guy was walking his dogs and he came up behind us and he said, hello. He was like, you put dynamite under our butts. We jumped so freaking high. And he said, can I help you? And I said, we're here for a reading. He goes, okay. Can you give us a reading? He said, yes. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. Come on in. And it was interesting because he too said, you've lost your grandmother. And it's really hurting you inside, but she's with you all the time. And she's very, very concerned about your education. She wants you educated. And she doesn't want you wasting time with really selfish people, which I'm surrounded by very selfish people at the time. And then she also told me, she said, he said, you're not getting married for a long time, a long time. I think I was 24 at the time. And I didn't marry until I was 34.
Right. So, wow.
That's my story. Barbara, do you want to go next?
Well, that's a tough act to follow, dude. Yeah. I'm going to have to stop creating stories. How about that? Well, what about me? Well, I'm sure people can tell by my accent that I am not American. I grew up in Zimbabwe. I was born and raised in Zimbabwe. For those who don't know, Zimbabwe is not in Texas, because believe me, I kid you not. I once had someone say to me, where are you from? And I said, Zimbabwe. And he said, is that in Texas?
Oh, boy.
Yeah. No, kid you not. These were some of my earlier, my first experiences in America. It was a trip. But anyway, I am from Zimbabwe, it's a southern African country. Mm-hmm. It's right up north of South Africa. So it sits there, it looks like a little teapot. And it literally, the funny thing is, it's the size of Texas.
So it's a
very small country, size of Texas, but probably half the population of Texas. Yeah. And I had a very interesting upbringing, because I grew up, I was born in what was then Rhodesia. And our Rhodesia was a segregated country. And so the setup was, you had the rural areas and Black people, I'm going to call them African people, lived on what were called reservations, pretty much like your Native Americans, because when colonialists came, they pushed them off the land that was fertile and land that was prime and put them in these desert-like places. And they were called reserves, tribal trust lands is what they called them. And so my mother's family lived in such an area. And when I was born in a village. I was literally born in a village. And you know, I know people love to fantasize about this. Yes, just close your eyes and see the little mud huts, right, with the one door and no windows. Yes. That set up with a little goat pen on the side, with a little chicken coop on the side, and a big old field behind. That was where I was born. So there is me, my mother, and my grandfather. Just back it up, beep, beep, back it up. My grandfather, my mother's father, was a polygamist. In traditional Shona culture, Karanga culture, which is the tribe I'm from, polygamy was very normal. So my grandmother, my mother's mother, was the first of five wives.
Wow.
So the first wife had five children, my mother and her four siblings. And they all went to school. So they all, and back then, going to school, now, the British were different from colonization, say here, where they actually wanted their natives educated. So, but they had to be educated only so far and no more. So there were certain trades or professions they could go into, like nursing and teaching. So these were considered very good. So my mom was trained as a teacher. My dad, on the other hand, was one of the first, in fact, he was the first African person to go to the school, Rhodesia School of Social Work. So I don't know how he wangled that, but then the Catholics are involved in there somewhere. You know, the Catholics. You know them. So anyway, I was born in that setting. I was born at the peak of the war for independence for Zimbabwe. So 1972 is when I was born. And this war, which was basically what they call a guerrilla war, because it was fought in the bush, in the villages, but not in the cities that the British had built. So they were fine. This war just raged and ravaged the villages. That's where I was born. And the way it was set up was that the natives had their home, and what they were allowed to call home is the tribal trust lands. But they went to the cities to work. Mm-hmm. So the British wanted their labor, but didn't want them. So they went to work, and most of them would, especially the men, would live in hostels and barracks. And when they had time off, they would catch buses to go to their tribal trust lands. Most times they were not allowed to bring their families into the city. So if you were married, your wife and kids stayed in the tribal trust lands and you went to work. And then you would commute back and forth. They didn't want your family in there. No. So my mom was a school teacher and she worked in a rural school. So when my parents actually met, when my father was a school of social work and my mom went to visit, again, all clandestine, because you were not allowed to have visitors if you were a male. And so my mom got pregnant. She went back. She had me in the village. And then she had to go back to work. She taught at a school, like, I don't know, 5 miles from where we, you know, where our homestead was. So I, too, am a grandma's baby. I was raised by my grandmother predominantly because my mother worked and my father was at school in the city. Right. So come 1979, 1980, independence is on the horizon. I was about 4 or 5 years old. And I remember this very vividly. It was now possible for the men who worked in the city to get homes and bring their families to stay with them. But they couldn't get homes in the all-white suburbs. They had to get homes in what we called townships, if you've heard of that name, townships, like the ghettos, basically. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I joined my parents. That's when my parents joined each other and became a couple. And, you know, and then my brother was born. But the idea of home never left. Home being not your town home, but the rural areas. And because I was such a rural girl, every school holiday or vacation, I got to go back home because my grandmother was really my mama, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So I went to school in the city. That was my dual upbringing. I went to school in the city with all the amenities of the city. I went to an all-white school where at the very beginning, 1979, I think I was one of five Black children, African children, in the class, which had its own challenges, but that was that. But they had to start integrating us because an African government was coming. Mm-hmm. And so any segregated schools were likely to be shut down, mm-hmm. right? And so that was my city life. And then when school was out for 2 weeks or 3 weeks for Easter or whatever, mm-hmm. we were taken to the village and that's where we were left with our grandparents. And it was considered that that would ground us.
Yeah.
To know our roots, to know where we come from, because there was still this very big suspicion about white ways, British ways. They were good to have, but they weren't who you are, right? You had to always remember where you came from. Mm-hmm. And so to this day, that still exists as a structure in Zimbabwe. If I meet a fellow Zimbabwean and I say, where are you from? They'll say, I'm from Harare, but my home. So we have two names for home. Mm-hmm. There's the word Kumba. Kumba means my city home. Mm-hmm. And then there's the word Kumusha. Kumusha means my rural home. Mm-hmm. So when I ask a Zimbabwean, Munopvepi, meaning where do you originate? I'm asking about Kumusha, their rural home. So they would tell me where their rural home was.
Right.
Right. And there's always, you know, Zimbabweans are like that. We love to find some connectivity. So yes. We then start asking about your totem, what's your totem, and start to see if there's any, whatever. Yeah. So that's me in a nutshell. So that was my dual upbringing. And so generic African auntie, you were asking about that podcast, is literally old world wisdom from how I grew up. The wisdom I garnered from my aunties and my grandma and the people in the village. And I really believe it's not stuff you'll find in books. It's definitely not stuff they teach in school, at least of all here. But I love the idea that it's a totally different way of looking at the world. And I would love to share this with particularly young women who are getting ready to navigate the world. Like the idea of centering and knowing who you are is so critical. And so I got that from home. Yeah. So even when I went to the all-white school where you know, your identity is kind of shaken, I went through some cognitive dissonance for a bit. But that pillar of knowing who I was from the village was really what helped a lot of us African kids in those early days, because there were so few of us. That's what helped us navigate that space, is knowing who we were. And so that's in a nutshell. And then what happened? So that was that. That's how I grew up and then finished high school. I left Zimbabwe at 18, pretty much. My dad died when I was 12. My mom was a widow. And I just had the sense that I needed to get out of the country so I could work and help my mom put the rest of my siblings through school. So I left and it's my story is so similar to yours in terms of serendipity, in terms of me believing that there's divine, there's my ancestors and there's a hand that moves things. Because I ended up in Germany where I worked as an au pair and I was able to put the rest of my siblings through school. Fortuitously, after that, I got a scholarship. Again, just that invisible hand moving. And I got a scholarship in Glasgow, Scotland, wow, to study medical biochemistry at the medical school.
Wow.
And and so I was in Glasgow for 7 years, studied medical biochemistry. And that's where I met Cyril. And Cyril was a Rhodes Scholar at Oxford University in the UK. So Scotland, England, think Scotland, Oxford University, right? And that's how we met. And he then came over. He was already a physician, just doing a PhD, came over to do residency at Hopkins, Johns Hopkins. And we came back, we went to Zimbabwe, got married in 97, and then moved to Baltimore, Maryland, where we were for, I think, 7 or 8 years. And so that's how I come to be in this country. So it was kind of a whirlwind that every now and then I'm like, how did I end up here?
Oh my gosh. So you married in 97. I married in 97. Dave, what year did you get married?
96.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. October 97.
I was so June of 96.
What was the month, Dave?
June. Yep. June 1st, 96. Yep.
Wow. And of course, Matthew's engaged. So just wanted to say that. Just wanted to put it up. So
I want to be maid of honor, Matthew. I've never been anybody's maid of honor. I want to wear a frou-frou dress. Come on.
A lot of poo-poo on the dresses and a lot of extravagancy.
Perfect.
Yeah, so there's a lot. We're seeing parallels, and I'm anxious to hear from the guys because, you know, I know both of you and you know, growing up through the school of hard knocks, I think is something that we have in common. I mean, Matthew and I are very close. And so, Matthew, do you want to chime in here and tell a little of your story, your journey, some part that molded you into this particular therapist that you are?
Yeah, sure. So, well, I grew up in a family that was 100% Polish, Polish Catholic. And so that you can just imagine, I mean, similar to when you're talking about like Italians, like with the finger, it's like Polish families are similar in terms of the very like rigid kind of like ancestral roots and like with the grandparents and the aunts and uncles and godfathers, godmothers. And it's very like that system is important. Unabashedly so, I really didn't have a choice but to kind of, the essence of me is like speaks my truth before I speak my truth. And so growing up, it was like with my grandparents and you know, like my grandparents more recently, a few years ago, my mom's mom had passed away. But growing up, I always spent the weekends and during the days over both of my parents' grandparents. So similar to you, Barbara, too, is that like kind of raised by my grandma. My grandmas were my moms essentially too. And so like kind of teaching me Polish, and I used to be able to speak Polish. And when I started understanding it, that's when they got scared. And so part of it is like, you know, I learned, I think, you know, and you've heard me say this before that I love and like that concept of that kind of bloodline that has just kind of been that courses through me. I learned from my grandparents. And you can tell I'm referencing my grandparents. So growing up, I didn't necessarily have, and quite honestly, I have to be, you know, to all the viewers out there and listeners is that, you know, I am obviously like, you know, a man, but I happen to be gay. And growing up, I knew that at such a young age, I knew who, like, just who I was. And I think part of that, you know, even outside of that category, because Western civilized culture loves categories, and they use categories sometimes as a fear mongering because of their own insecurities and the person's own kind of, you know, fears, if you will. And so for me, it was never a fear. I never felt afraid to be me. I never felt, you know, scared to be me. And so I, growing up in school, similar to you, Mary Grace, too, Kindred Spirit and Barbara and all of us, is that, you know, education and knowledge, and it wasn't the knowledge that was powerful. It was what I do with it. And that's one thing I was always taught, is that, you know, you can know a lot of stuff, but if everything is important, then nothing is important. Mm-hmm. And so over the years, and as like growing up, K through six and middle school, junior high school, college, I always, and sometimes, you know, unapologetically leaned too much into that kind of what turned into perfectionism a little bit. And then I had to understand that when I was done with my, you know, K through 12 and that kind of brick and mortar, it was interesting symbolically. I just felt like this is the time for me to break free. I grew up in a home where, you know, acceptance wasn't necessarily breeded. It wasn't disseminated. It was not written on the walls, you know, spoken on the walls, you know, it just wasn't something that, you know, was there and it was taught. So, you know, even through my own therapy, and I think this is, that's an important key. And we've talked about that. All of us have, is that, you know, I understood that I didn't know what happiness was because it just wasn't modeled to me. So growing up, I leaned so heavily into just the kind of intelligentsia, if you will. And for a while, that was something that I lived in a cocoon. And I said it, you know, earlier on, is that, you know, quite honestly, I should not be here. You know, I think, you know, and obviously for the listeners, you know, kind of reading into that what you will, but I think we, you know, we know that there are times where, you know, that idea of it just isn't worth it to go through that much pain when all I'm doing is being me and living, right? And so I say this to clients all the time when they're frustrated, is that, you know, there's no, you can only be you because everyone else is taken. And so there was a period in my life where, and I say period, and don't mistake that for a day or a month. It's been years and it's still continuing. And it was really beyond and through my undergrad. And I had different encounters with different professors or different people at work where it steered me in a way, again, to kind of the therapy field, and always knowing that that was it. And I bumped that minor up to a major. And I ended up actually in my undergrad, I was working with as a kind of a research assistant, kind of doctoral assistant. And that was something that just like after that, I went to go on and get my degree in being a psychologist. And it was one of those things that was interesting because initially in February of my last semester, one of my colleagues, one of my friends had said, well, there's an office open in Plymouth. And I said, no, I said, you know, I'm not interested in this. I'm not, you know, I'm going to work for, you know, the corporation. I'm going to do that. And again, that was part of that. What was modeled to me, now I know this in retrospect, what was modeled to me growing up. And so February went by, March went by, April went by. This was the end of April at May. So May comes around and my colleague and friend said, you know, there's still one more office, and the person that was going to actually fell through and wasn't able to. And then there comes Mary Grace into my life. So I get Mary Grace's name and number.
Oh my God.
And I showed up, and I have a cousin Connie on my dad's side, and just same kind of features at the time, Mary Grace, when I met her, shorter hair. So I'm walking, I showed up to the building, we were meeting, and I was like, okay. So I went through the back door and I'm coming down and I see this like vibrant, like just full of color, full of life woman down the hall. And I'm like, if that is the person who is the suite owner, I'm sold. I'm taking the office. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And I didn't even know. And I didn't even know if it was. And I looked, interestingly enough, and I was like, why is my cousin here? And I'm thinking it's my cousin. I'm like, this is so weird. I never knew my cousin owned the suite and everything. And then, of course, you know, 30 feet away, 20 feet away, 10 feet. And I knew it wasn't my cousin. Yes. And, you know, I was just filled with, you know, the kind of my own internal endorphins. And so, you know, we went in and she showed us the place in the waiting room and showed me the office. And I was like, oh, my God, this is my dream no longer deferred. Because I knew, and I've been preparing for myself to be painted on the walls. It could make me cry. For myself to be spread on the walls, for my love to be right, kind of spread out. And you know, Mary Grace, we talk about that, and you know, even in the podcast and in our conversations, all of us have talked about the importance of ourselves kind of spreading out and embracing that abundance of all the things that make us. And I think that was the beginning when I truly started realizing my own power, my own sense of self. And it's been like almost 10 years later and not looking back and really kind of reflecting, of course. And I think to just the people listening, you know, knowing, and it's interesting because even when people, when I meet patients or, you know, they say, hi, I'm bipolar. And I'll say, no. Who are you?
Mm-hmm.
Who, you know, and I think that's the same thing. You know, I think, and I joke and I'm like, I know what everyone's thinking. I'm a white male. And truthfully, people say, you know, like I said, who I am, a lot of times people just say, oh, you're a gay man. You're gay. And it's like, no, I'm much more than that. Right. And I think the message and kind of what I learned and also what I've kind of cultivated with my friendships and obviously, you know, two new friends, Barbara and David, it's like, just understanding how to be vulnerable and to be yourself. And I think that's kind of where I'm at in my journey. Yeah. But I had
but you
to,
forgot.
Yeah, I had to create. And I always say, you know, if you don't come from a good home and for different reasons, you can create your home and you can actually, and your friends become your family of choice.
Right.
And that's something that I think for everyone listening out there, for especially Jesus, for me, yeah. That's something that I think can get you through the toughest of times, because even when I feel like I'm alone, it's a feeling, but it actually doesn't equate to the reality, because once I actually pick up that phone or, you know, mm-hmm. meet up with somebody, it breaks that isolation and it rejects that isolation, which actually allows you, right? Mm-hmm. Or me, speaking of me, it allows me to be me. So that's just a little bit of insight into who I am and kind of what guides me and, you know, kind of the interactions that I look for and search for. And I feel like divinely connected mm-hmm. to things.
And we think we just knew each other in another life, Matthew.
We did. We did.
Siblings.
We did.
Dave.
Yes.
David Wright. Well, last but not least.
I feel like I can't compete. And I know it's not a competition, but... So I'll just start,
Dave, you only have 2 minutes left on the show. I'm kidding.
Okay. I'll make it fast. Well, Mary Grace mentioned that, yes, I guess school of hard knocks, I think that's the term you use. So in general, I'll start with my parents. Both my parents were uneducated. Both were born. One, my dad was born in West Virginia. My mom in Georgia. Neither one finished high school. He worked in a blue collar job here in the Detroit area. My mom was a stay at home mom. Like the you know, that was her job, that to stay home and take care of the kids. And I don't know, all through like elementary and junior high, I was just kind of adrift. I didn't have direction. I was not a motivated student. I mean, I wasn't terrible. I never failed a class, but I was the kind of kid that's like, okay, it's a 2-page paper. Let me get this done as quick as I can. It's good enough. Here you go. So there was never any real effort. Let's say that. So my parents were divorced when I was 8. And then, of course, my mom was a single mom. She was a waitress. So, you know, again, you talk about being poor. We were on all the government programs. We had the government cheese blocks and the powdered milk and the all of that. Yep. All that comes with it. And so at some point, I don't know, it's probably I was probably 15 at the time. And as we were growing up, this comes into play and you'll see how it connects. As we were growing up, there was a kid that lived two doors down that was a couple years younger than me, but his parents, they went to church every Sunday. So my mom would just send the kids, well, myself and my brother, with them. I mean, she would never go, but she just said, oh, you're going to church with them. So it was a Baptist church. And I had exposure to that starting at a young age on and off. But for some reason, when I was 15, I just thought I need a place to fit in or to belong. Because, you know, school was school. It just was what I did to get through the day. Excuse me. So I got fairly involved with my church when I was like 15, and ended up really involved with the youth group, and I would go every Sunday and just joining all those activities. So long story short, the church I was going to, the pastor of that church owned a summer camp, a church camp up in the UP of Michigan. So when I was 17, my senior year in high school, I started working on staff at the summer camp as a counselor. So the seed has been planted way back when I was like 16, 17, the seed of counseling and helping other people. So I worked all through college. I would go to college. Okay, and let me get to the point as far as getting to college. None of my family had ever been to school. They'd never graduated high school. So when it was time for me being involved in church, I had guidance from other people there on, oh, you need to probably go to college. What do you want to do? All of that. So I had to figure, I didn't have any idea. I mean, this is back in 83. There was no computers. There was no way to research there. So I spent hours on the phone just trying to find out, how do I apply? What do I do? I went to school my freshman year and arrived, and I didn't know I had to buy books until I got there. I mean, just things like that I had no clue of what I was doing. Yeah. So during my college years, I would go to school through the school year, work at summer camp as a camp counselor for the summer, and then go back to school. So really, I kind of, in a way, I was just getting away from home. Mm-hmm. I think intentionally, but part of it was just I just didn't feel like there was any there was nothing there that was I don't want to say worth it. I mean, I love my mother, but neither of my parents were an example of what to do or to direct me. Yeah. I got my direction from other people. Yeah. So I really stayed away. I did that all 4 years of college, graduated school, and then, of course, I graduated with a bachelor's in psych, which means I worked for minimum wage at a group home when I got out of there. And I'm like, oh, boy, I'm going to have to go back to school. Now I have to do more school. So then I finally got a program as far as getting my master's degree. And now since I graduated college, now I'm like, how do I put this? I'm like the big shit of the family because nobody else has even finished high school. Like my sister did graduate. I'll say my one sister graduated. My other sister dropped out. My brother did graduate. He became, he got a career. He wanted to be a police officer, and he did that as soon as he was out of high school. So he did accomplish his goals as far as his career. But nobody else had even thought about college. And then when I went to get my master's degree, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, they misplaced me with this family in some way. Like they were really my family. So I end up going to school, get my master's. Of course, while I was in school, I met Mary Grace through a mutual friend of ours. And we kind of hung out and had fun. And yeah, we did, like I said, we tore up Ann Arbor more than a few times. So my last semester of school comes around, I need to find a place for an internship. Now I have to intern somewhere. And Mary Grace is like, well, why don't you come out to Chelsea, where she was working at the time? I'm like, oh, yeah, that'll be great. So that's when I spent 6 months at Chelsea Hospital working inpatient substance abuse while you were there, Mary Grace. So that's what got us connected. Well, we're connected with a mutual friend, but that really, I mean, we spent a lot of time during that time
together. But then working relationship. Developing that working relationship.
So long story short is I had to find my own way, and I didn't have this goal when I was 16, but it just developed based on my experiences that I that I'm going to help people. That's what I it just grew in me. It wasn't planned. It just, that's where I'm mm-hmm. supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. And what's so remarkable, if you hear all of our stories, we're self-made. We come through the school of hard knocks. We've broken probably all statistics. We really have. And what a great message that I hope everyone that's listening, you know, when you really feel beat up and you feel like you're nothing and you come from nothing and that there's something wrong with you, to get connected with school, to get connected with people who are going to feed you and inspire you, who's different. You know, it's the ugly duckling story, guys. You know, the swan egg that rolls into the duckling nest and it gets picked on and berated and belittled and it's hated and it feels the ugliest of all of its siblings and it wants to die and it goes and swims in the water and it's ready to take its own life and it looks one last time in the water and the reflection of the water and it sees swans going by. And the swans say to the duckling, come with us. It's time for us to go, to migrate. And the swan's like, wait, me? I'm not a swan. I'm a duck. And they're like, what are you talking about? You're not a duck. You're a swan. And for the first time, that ugly duck is connected with its real family. It's family that makes him feel worth, value, beauty. And so when you're in that place of just feeling like you're not enough, that there's something wrong with you or people are putting you down or judging you or discriminating you, you know, I want you to look up and say, fuck you. It ain't gonna happen. Don't buy into it. It's some bullshit. And get to people who will support you and get to those surrogates. We're going to walk into your life and say, come on along. You're one of us and we're going to feed you and we're going to inspire you. And you meet like on the road, each one of us have met these little earth angels that kind of come into your life and say, hey, you should do this. Try this. You know, go this way with your education. Start at the community college, whatever it is, advance. Invest in you, become the good parent to you. Even when you don't feel it, you fake it till you make it. When I started out, I was the most insecure person ever. I made it because I liked making people happy and pleasing people. And I listened. I was good at listening to those people who were successful. Professors, counselors, you know, when they talked to me, I wanted to be better. And it sounds like all of us had that fire in our bellies to advance and break all the rules and end up with success. All of us with educations, all of us knowing one another. And that's how it works. So I really hope, you know, anyone who's listening really hears our stories, because you can take a look at us and go, yeah, but, you know, they're successful or they're this. We want to say back, we did not start out anything.
No,
like
I was one of those, like Mary Grace, you said, I was not supposed to make it. Okay. Me and my siblings, we were not supposed to make it. Okay. Your father dies and you're left with a 34-year-old widow. She has four kids. I was 12. The youngest was 4 years old. I hear the voices of people saying it's over. The girls are going to be prostitutes and he's going to be a burglar or a robber. Yeah. That's it. He's done. They're done. Yeah. We were not supposed to make it out of there. No. We really were not. And the reason I have such empathy for young women is that I had to hearken to the voice of my grandmother every single time. When I was in Germany, let me tell you the situation. It wasn't this setup where you take your kids, right? I took my kid to school and I remember sobbing because Chi-Chi was going to Connecticut to school. And everybody's like, what did you think your mom did when you got on a plane for the first time and left for Germany with a one-way ticket and she had no access to you? She didn't know where you were going, what was going to happen to you. Yeah. And I remember those times when I was in Germany and I was faced with situations, and literally I had to hearken to the old world wisdom. I had to hear my grandmother saying things to me like, no matter what happens, do not ever let anybody have the power to change your character. Mm-hmm. No matter what happens, stay who you are. And I was 18, 19. Mm-hmm. Anything could have happened to me. I could have been trafficked. I could have disappeared, and nobody could have helped me because I had nobody. It was just me. My poor widowed mother in Zimbabwe had no way. There was no way she was ever going to be able to get to me if anything had happened. And I knew this. I literally knew that I'm here on my own. And I did exactly what you did, which is to literally pray that people were brought around me who were good for me.
That's right.
I prayed for discernment so that I could discern those who meant me evil and those who meant me well. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. And like Matthew said, you know, it's a miracle that I'm here, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
When I look back at my trajectory,
it really is miraculous. And I'm so glad we're telling our stories because people need to hear and see these are real miracles. I mean, you know, I got to watch the time here, but when I say I grew up in poverty, I also grew up in a house. I mean, my senior year of high school, I was by myself in a house with no hot water, food stamps, no telephone. Mm-hmm. I washed my clothes in a tub. I mean, the poverty, you know, Dave was telling the story of the freaking cheese from the church, where you got no food and you have to go to the pantry at the church. To this day, I can't eat Velveeta cheese. Like,
well, that government cheese, it comes in a big block, and there's no way to slice it. So every slice of cheese is like an inch thick. That's as small as you could get it.
That's very true.
It is.
I mean, it's real. It was real poverty and aloneness, just like you're saying, Barbara and Matthew and David. Like, we had this aloneness inside, and, you know, somehow we just knew to keep moving forward and to keep our ears open and to watch and to learn. And we were all able to do it. I mean, we're all sitting before you with master's degrees and experience and high education coming from absolutely freaking nothing. Not the guidance, like Dave, you were saying, mm-hmm. like we didn't get, you know, go on these trips to the college where you visit the campus.
Yeah.
When I got to Michigan, I got dumped off in the dark in a house with no lights, no nothing, freaked out, scared to death, having a panic attack. And I can't even imagine being in a different country. I was only in a different state, and it was
different country, different language. I mean, I picked up German in 2 weeks because I had to survive. I was in a village, like a tiny little village called Reinlingen, where when I walked on the streets, people would look out the window and say, "Ah, das ist eine Schwarze." Ah!
I think too, the more that you learn to love yourself, the less you offer yourself up for collateral. And I think that's something like for me, divinely, I think I've always, you know, instead of settling for less, I'm always settling for more now. Yeah. And, you know, I think that's something that, you know, to people listening is that, you know, regardless too, I think of even if, and this is for people too, who might feel like, well, how can I relate? Because it's not, even if you come from something and you do have an abundance maybe at home, you can still feel alone too inside. And so that's where you have to, learning to love yourself is a lifelong journey. And like you were saying, Barbara, and, you know, Mary Grace and David, is like when you can surround yourself with these surrogates, with these people who actually are modeling what you need, it's a divine intervention. It's not something that is just happening by chance. It is literally happening because you have willed it and called it into your life. And some people are only blessed enough and, you know, fortunate enough that they do find those angels on earth where they get to have them in their life, where they stop selling their life and their body and their mind and their soul for collateral. And they get to actually know their own worth. And that's when that shame stops and you get to like teach someone because you've been taught.
Right. Yep. You're right. I mean, that's absolutely. So well put. That is so, so well put. Boy,
yeah, boy, just, that was a fast hour. We're like,
yeah, I know, right.
Right.
We're done. I mean, we got like a minute left and I want to, you know, say, you know, for next week, you know, I wonder if we should really go after what parents are going through with this decision to send their kids back to school or not. There's some really great articles. So I want to put that idea maybe out there. We're kind of winging it. I don't know if I will be in New York. I will probably be zooming into the call next week. It depends upon my dad. But I want to plant that seed. And for the listeners, you know, again, any feedback. I want to give a shout out to Dave. Your podcast now has started.
It's called. We got 7 episodes in, so it'll be hitting very soon. As soon as the feed picks it up. Yep.
Your show is called
Motor City Hypnotist Podcast.
Motor City Hypnotist Podcast. Mm-hmm. And we've got Barbara. She does a couple of things. She's got a podcast coming out, and we're really going to start plugging that one too. The podcast coming out, Barbara, is going to be called.
It's going to be called Hi, It's Your Generic African Auntie, Old World Wisdom That You Phone Find in Books, and They Certainly Didn't Teach You in School.
And of course, you can find Psyched by MG. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, right here on Facebook, Detroit Podcast Network. And we want to give a shout out to them because they make all this magic happen for us so we can just focus on the users. God, guys, you know, this was so great. I mean, like Dave said, man, we really think hours go by fast.
I know. It's crazy.
Ridiculous, truly. And Barbara, there was another plug I wanted to give you. You have your podcast, and then there's another thing.
Oh, so yeah, TikTok username is @BarbaraMangami. Come and follow me if you dare.
Yeah,
I'm just saying, Auntie on that platform is totally different, Auntie.
Yes. That's right. So good. And Matthew, of course, is with me in practice, you know, and we have a private practice going out in Plymouth, Michigan. Mm-hmm. My website is up and running and beautiful. And I actually got David, right? I got an appointment scheduled through the website.
Fantastic.
Shocked the crap out of me. And so Psyched by MG's website has now been updated and working well. Kudos to my daughter. I have to give a little shout out to Amelia because she really helped me on that one. So other than that, we're going to see everybody next week. Is Matt, you paying attention in there?
He is. He's ready when you are.
Okay.
All right, guys.
Bye, everybody. Please.
Bye, everybody.
Be safe, and we'll see you soon.